London, visiting with y'all. For an introductory of a little story, the date was March 10th, 1748. The location was the Atlantic Ocean. The winds that had been building for days had finally exploded into violent ferocity. And amidst the crashing gale with waves as tall as buildings, a wooden merchant ship called the Greyhound was struggling to stay afloat. The storm had already wrecked huge sections of the ship, even punching a hole in its side. As the waters flooded through and raced through the breach, crew members worked feverishly to patch the hole, whilst others were desperately manning the pumps. Some unfortunates screamed in terror as they were swept overboard along with much of the provisions that they had had. The end looked near, and it was surely just a matter of time before the ship was consumed by a hungry sea. But for one man in particular, this storm was to prove even more significant, for it would mark a radical and dramatic turning point in his life. I'm going to leave off on that story right there, and we're going to come back to that closer to the end. This morning, if you imagine yourself in a situation like that, it might do a few things to us. It might make you think of who you are and what you've done. Might make you remember a few things as your life is flashing before your eyes. And depending on who you are and what your frame of mind is, it would really highlight in your mind how you wanted this to end and who you want to be. And this morning, I have that question for you. Who are you? And sometimes when we meet new people, this question comes up as we shake hands. What's your name? Who are you? And generally, we would start with a name and where they're from, perhaps, and asking questions who they're related to and all the particulars and what they do for work. And that would give us a rough idea who they are, just an overview. And perhaps we would discuss relatives and maybe which family they were from, and that would give us a little bit deeper insight of who they actually were. And they would proceed to maybe tell us about their work and their hobbies and maybe which church they went to. And that would give us a little deeper idea of who they might be. But what happens when God asks us, who are you? And we know that question is coming our way at some point in time in our life. When God will ask us who you are, it talks about it in Matthew 12. And over the last few months, as we've been talking and studying about the children of Israel and them coming out of the land of Egypt and on their way to the promised land, we kind of see who they are and their frames of mind and what their thoughts and actions produce in the long run. And this process that I've been thinking about, trying to understand how do we apply that to our lives today and make it effective, and how can we take that picture and make it a picture that we really, really understand what we're thinking and how we're framing things. And where it really struck me was looking at the picture of Joshua and Caleb and the rest of the spies. And I know we studied it a few weeks back in our Sunday school, but I'd like to look at that story again In Numbers chapter 13, verse 26. Numbers 13, verse 26, and said, "And they went and came to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation of the children of Israel into the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came into the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land. And the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. And then Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. And the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it. For we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with them said, We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. And we saw the giants and the son of Anak. We are as grasshoppers in their sight. So, they both had a picture. Sorry, my writing. They both had the same picture of the promised land. They had both seen exactly the same things. They had both seen the fruit of it, and they had both seen the sons of Anak. They had seen everything. Both had the exact same picture. And the first picture was a picture of, let's say we call this one, how can two sets of eyes look at the same picture and see something entirely different? And the only way I could put this, and I did some study on this, is if this picture, these pictures, are framed. And this picture frame is gilded with me, self, and I. And this picture is framed with God. And then the outside of that picture frame we have some more items to explain what's going on here. We have the narrative. We'll put the narrative up here. The narrative is, we are not good enough. We are too weak. we can't. And the emotions are anxiety. We have fear. Anxiety, we have fear, we have sorrow. These are the emotions that are encompassing this picture frame. So to contrast that, and we're still looking at the exactly same picture. Exactly the same picture, but we're framing it differently. This one here, the narrative is, I trust God. We will do our best with God's help. Because we are relying on the inside frame. The emotions along with that one are belief, assurance, and peace, because we have our inner frame with God. So the pictures still are the same. The frames look much different from each other. And so what are the results of framing? Framing our pictures like this. Results. The results are, I don't even have room, but procrastination. Procrastination. Lack of trust. We have missed opportunities. And the results over here are action. We have opportunities as God gives us. We're taking opportunities. We have decisiveness because we're relying on God. How is our mind framed? We all have exactly the same. We all have exactly the same Jesus. We all have the exact same Bible. We have everything that we have. We see the exact same earth. And my question this morning, when I ask, who are you? Who am I? Who are we? Is how do I view everything and anything that comes into my life? And what do I do with it? How do I react, respond to things that come into my life? We see Caleb and Joshua. And their report says, let us go up at once and possess it. For we are well able to overcome it. Do we see their mind frame in a few simple words? In a few simple words, we are well able to take it. And then do we see the mind frame of the doubting 10 other spies? We're not good enough. We can't do it. They are way stronger than us. Our army cannot overcome the giants. We're afraid. We're very anxious. We should be going back to Egypt. let's wait a bit. This doesn't look like it's going to work. Their lack of trust, and they had a massive missed opportunity. A massive missed opportunity. I want to look at two other mind frames, mindsets. The next one I want to take out of Samuel, 1 Samuel. Chapter 17. And we're going to jump through this chapter a little bit. Starting at verse 1, we're going to look at, we're going to look at 17, 1 through 11. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and they were gathered together at Shochoh, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shochoh and Azekah in Ephes-Demimim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched in the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat. He was armed with a coat of mail, and weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. He had graves of brass upon his legs, and the target of brass between his shoulders. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, "Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and you servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And when Saul and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Let's jump down to verse 22. And David left his charge in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And he talked with them. Behold, there came up a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have ye seen this man that is come up surely to defy Israel? Is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and give him his daughter, and make him his father's house free in Israel?" And David spake unto the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to this man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Who is this Philistine that should defy the armies of the living God? Then we're going to go down to verse 31 and 32. And when the words were heard which David spake, he rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go up and fight this Philistine." Whoa, what a change of mind frames. So again, if we were to just jot that on the board, they both had the exact same picture. They had the exact same picture. They seen this Philistine that was mocking the armies of the living God, tormenting them to come be their servants, because ultimately no one had what it took to go and fight the Philistine. And in this one, before we had doubting and trusting, and we're calling going to call this one the fearful. And the brave. And this fearful is because of and we have an obstacle that we need to face. And I'm not going to write them all, but in this one here, we can't fight him because he's dangerous. We're not prepared to fight him. Prepared. We're afraid. And down here, the emotions are, we're anxious. And we're stressed because we might become servants to the Philistines. And so we hesitate. Because we don't have the right view of God. And over here, because of God, we face our fears. And we do it willingly, because God's on our side. And we have courage. We have boldness. We have peace doing that because we're viewing things through God's lens. We're viewing things from God's perspective. And the results on this side, they're paralyzed. They're stagnant. And there's an absolute lack of victory. Because all these narratives and emotions are framing the obstacle. And on this side, we have the results of victory. We have peace. And we have confidence because we're in the will of God. We're moving forward. We're moving forward. We're not fleeing up the other side of the mountain because of Philistine. The same Philistine that David saw, these guys are fleeing from. And we don't see any fleeing going on here. Now the next one I'm going to draw before we're going to look at scripture we're going to try to make this in our own day and age, and something that we might be able to relate to, possibly. We're going to call this guy cynic and the seeker. We're going to call this, I struggled with what to call this, but we're going to call this the Christian life. Slash, perhaps, church life. I'll just abbreviate that here, Christian life and the church life. You know what it's talking about. And we're going to look at it from a perspective of the 12 spies and Saul and his army, perhaps. We're going to look at a narrative and what's attached to it. So the narrative is, well, in the church there's hypocrites. So I don't want to be part of that. Nothing ever changes over there. It's all the shame. Nothing changes. Or else maybe I'm not good enough. I fail too much. We'll just put failures in there. And the emotions that come along with that, or maybe frustrations. Maybe some arrogance and bitterness. Maybe some helplessness. And what are we putting on the other side? What are we putting up on the other side? The seeker. And it talks numerous times in the New Testament about a seeker and what we seek. We are going to look for. We're going to find it. We're going to find what we're looking for. So let's say the narrative and the openness. Openness. We're not going to let, that's too long to write, we're not going to let our bad experiences determine our futures. We're going to seek to do God's will and be used where God wants us to be used. And the emotions that go along with that are going to be courage. And boldness. Along with joy. And humility. And then we're going to look at the results. What happens? What happens here? Stagnant, closed-minded, critical church life, Christian life. What happens over here? Open-mindedness, positivity, growth, learning about Jesus, spiritual fulfillment, and a working together. This here is very, very close to what the religious leaders in Jesus' day were framing everything as. They were skeptical of everything. So it created arrogance and bitterness, frustration on their part that people were following Jesus. And the people that actually learned to know Jesus and were framing that same Jesus were living victorious Christian lives with spiritual fulfillment in their life. And so back to who am I and who are you? And how do we view life and how do we approach life? And hindsight will always be 20/20. And we can look back and we can see all the times when we had the right mindset and the right mind frame. And we can't go back and undo the times we didn't. And as our story unfolds the way, first of all, we looked at Joshua and Caleb, and the story unfolds, we can easily pick out what was the right frame of mind. It's not hard at all. And if we look at David and Goliath, and the armies of the Philistine, and the armies of Saul, and we can easily see what was the right mind frame and the right mindset. And who am I? And what's my mind frame? What's my mindset? Does my mind frame and my mindset ultimately determine my eternal destiny? It did for Caleb and Joshua. With the help of God, they had the right mind frame and mindset. It did for David. And it will for us. It absolutely will for us. Let's look at Matthew chapter 6. He promises us in Matthew chapter 6, verse 33. But seek ye first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness. And his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for tomorrow. For tomorrow shall take for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day, and sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Take no thought. Just make sure you're looking today. Today is the day to be looking. Looking for the might mindset. Looking for what Christ, how Christ would frame my situation. Matthew chapter 7, just one down, verses 7 and 8. It says, and ask and it shall be given you, seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. One more in James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 5 and 7. 5 through 7. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given them. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering, for he that wavereth is like the wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord, a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways. That's actually, yeah. But if we ask, if we seek in faith, nothing wavering, that's when we're going to receive our mind frames that Jesus wants us to see. we do well to evaluate our frame of mind and our tendencies and how we frame things. And sometimes through life's events and circumstances, or maybe some friends will remind us to look at something a little differently, to see it from a different point of view, to look at it through a different lens. We have opportunities to switch frames. We sometimes do. A lot of times, actually. And I think the most graphic, dramatic switch that I could find was Paul's conversion in Acts chapter 9, where he had a serious switch of mind frames. Acts chapter 9, 1 through 9. And Saul, yet breathing out threatenings and slaughter against the disciples of the Lord, went unto the high priest and desired him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way, whether they were men or women, he might bring them bound unto Jerusalem. And as he journeyed, he came near Damascus, and suddenly there shined a light round about him, a light from heaven. And he fell to the earth and heard the voice say unto him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? And he said, Who art thou, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom thou persecutest. It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And trembling and astonished said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And the Lord said unto him, Arise and go into the city, for it shall be told thee what thou must do. And the men which journeyed with him stood speechless, hearing a voice, but seeing no man. And Saul arose from the earth. And when his eyes were opened, he saw no man, but they led him by the hand to Damascus. What a dramatic switch of frames from persecuting Jesus' followers to seeing Jesus and making that switch, making a huge switch. In closing, I'd like to look at Romans chapter 12 yet. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. It says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. And what really, really stood out to me in these two verses was the renewing of your mind. Renewing from what? And I think he's directly talking about renewing our frame of mind from something that is world-driven to one that is completely driven by Christ. One that has framed as the seeker. One that we look for what Jesus wants us to do, what he instructs us to do, and view everything we do in our life, whatever circumstances, opportunities, situations we encounter, that we look at the picture and we build a frame around it and build that frame with Jesus in mind and what he would have us to do. To close with that story was from the beginning in that ship. The man was John Newton. And John Newton turned his life around on that ship. Before that, while he was on that ship, he was a slave trader. He was a notoriously vile, immoral. He was so bad that even the Navy kicked him out. The British Navy kicked him out. And he became a slave trader merchantman and kept on his wicked ways till this event happened on March 10th, 1748. And he's seen his comrades go overboard, and he made a deal with God that if he would turn his life around, that he would work for Jesus. And they patched that boat up to just barely make it into the port of Liverpool before another massive storm ripped through that part of the ocean and through England. And that riveted in his mind how barely he made it out of there alive. And he made good on his promise to Jesus. And that is where the song Amazing Grace was born, because he said that was just the most amazing thing, that the grace of Jesus would save a man like that, like him. And he completely switched his frames of mind from me, myself, and I, what he wanted to do, living the selfish, vile life that he was living, to living a life consecrated to Jesus. May God bless.